Hello everyone, my name is Washara Thande and this is the Ubunifu podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today I have a very special guest. Her name is Werimo Duba. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes, it is. You got it right.
Yeah, because I know you want us, you usually want people to pronounce it, you'd want me to pronounce it the Kikuyu way because you have such high standards for me.
No, but friend, can we just actually take a minute to say that? Your Kikuyu, you need to give yourself props for your Kikuyu.
Bro, okay, I'll give myself props.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, her name is Werimo Duba. She is an amazing person that I've known since I was probably 12 years old.
It's been a long time. It's actually been a very long time.
But yeah, would you mind introducing yourself and letting us know what you do, who you are, where you come from?
Hey. Okay,
not all those things, but let me even speak Kikuyu here. All those things.
Okay, let's start. Let's see if I got this. Wow, tongue do not fail me. Jetako Wairimu Adufa, Demojiro, Kumabareaga Dero, Nyubaya Wajao, and we will start. The Kikuyu finishes
there.
I shall continue the rest in English. I am a human being,
nice.
Living and based in Nairobi, Kenya.
What?
As of Nairobi. Right now.
As of
yes,
right
Nairobi!
And guess what? She's living and prospering in that Nairobi.
We're trying. Neko Geria, please. One day at a time. Yes, and one of the things that I do is that I run an Instagram platform called Werjo Kenya that shares snippets of Kenyan music history. And so yeah, that's one of my many interests. I would say that I'm an overall creative.
Hey, tell me about it.
Yeah. So that's me.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much for that intro. So the one question I'm going to ask is, as a creative, why did you start Werjo Kenya? Okay, so sorry, I didn't introduce Werjo Kenya that nicely, but basically, as she said, Werjo Kenya is an Instagram page that she started that shares and archives Kenya's Kenya's musical history. So you archive history through music. And the reason why I find that so profound is because she's creating a narrative for history that's very unique. Who would have thought that you could archive a country's history through music? But this girl is doing it, and she's doing it so well. So tell us, what is Werjo Kenya? What's the idea behind it? Because I know it's your brainchild. Tell us.
Yes, it's my baby. So I think to kind of give a backstory to how it began, it started off when I joined university. So I did my university education here in Kenya at Daystar University. And I think being in that space with the people I was hanging around with, sharing conversations with, I think for the first time I was introduced to like African history as a whole, and Kenyan history in specific, in a way that I hadn't been exposed to before. Because previously my education had been very white, American, Christian, evangelical, conservative. Yeah, oppressive in that sense, which meant that I didn't know very much about who I was. And so I was stepping into this new space and learning and relearning so many things. And I think for me, the way it came about more tangibly is through music, because that's what I did in university. I did music. And so,
I don't think I knew that. I thought you did like history. I thought you did history in university. But I think that's just me drawing conclusions because of Radio Kenya. I'm like, she probably just did history.
I did music. So I think even just like analyzing my experience, I think I only did one class in my entire 4 years of university education. It was one class that specifically focused on like African music. Like, how do you even, for 1 year, one class in 4 years, how do you even begin to unpack even Kenyan music by itself?
That's true.
Would be impossible, let alone like African music. So I just kind of noticed that for me in that context, there's like a disparity between what I was learning and what was my like lived experience, because a lot of what our curriculum was based was very Western. And I'm like, I'm not gonna be in a matatu listening to like Beethoven or like Mozart, or when I go to the kiosk to buy like milk from the mama. I mean, it's not gonna be Mozart that's playing in her kiosk, you know? So I'm like, how can I like bridge that gap and like make it more accessible? Because I think I also noticed that a lot of my friends were, in a sense, didn't know much about Kenyan history or Kenyan music history, or even know where to begin to start looking for like information. So that's kind of how it started.
Including
yourself. Well, many of us.
Let me tell you.
I didn't know. I was like, now where do I start?
The guys, you went where? Yeah. Like, I remember when you started Radio Kenya, because you started it around around this time in 2020. Well, not this time, because the podcast came to be released at this time, but like,
it actually began October of 2019.
October of 2019. Imagine. Are you serious? Me, all this time I thought it started after BLM.
No. But then, I mean, I think when BLM came, that's when I was like seeing even more like intersections and connections, and you know,
And even more reason. Before, I don't want to go on a tangent, but let's just go off on this tangent. Do you feel like the BLM process kind of like amplified your work?
I think so, because I think that's also like when a lot of, like, because a lot of people are now going back into history and saying that the history that we've been taught by and large is the one that has been dictated by those who have oppressed us. So how can we go back and readdress that? So I think that's possibly where maybe my work gained a lot of traction in a sense, maybe. And then also because I think a lot of people are doing similar work on the continent. It may not be music, but through like different, a lot of people on the continent are readdressing historical narratives. So,
yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, me, I'll just say, it's very, very interesting. Like, seeing your journey has been really interesting, because I've been there more or less, not from the beginning, but from the
beginning. And even you were doing similar work. I remember, like, you'd, like, share, like, historical bits. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know. And I think that time you were in Mombasa. I think you were living in Mombasa.
Yes.
So I was like, wow, there's so much that I don't know. And, you were also doing the thing. Yes,
I was. I was doing the thing. That was back when Instagram did not suck the soul out of me, but yes, I did do the thing. So I just wanted to highlight like that whole concept of histories and how, especially in Kenya, we don't really know much about our history. Like, even me, when I was sharing those stories about, like, I think because I moved to Mombasa and because I was made culturally aware, I realized that even when I walk down a street, there's a piece of history that I will learn, and so that's why I used to share it on Instagram, you know. Just to be on random days where I'm like out with my mom and I'm like, here's a piece of history, guys. Learn. And so it's really interesting when we look back at, like, me and you did the same curriculum. I feel like that curriculum unpacking needs a whole podcast episode.
Friend, the violence. And you see, you don't even recognize the violence when you're in it. It's like after you leave and you're like, what?
What? We shall discuss that. I feel like we need like multiple guests for that. Like all of us, our circle, all the people who've like unpacked and learned the truth more or less. Yeah. So coming from like a very westernized way system of education where we learned, like, you guys, me and her can tell you who the first to the probably the fifth or sixth or tenth president of the United States is. We can tell you who established the United, like, very stupid things that don't attain to us as Africans. And then when we got into university, when we got older, that's when we realized, oh, wait, there's so much history and such a richness within our own Kenyan identity that we should explore. And so my other question is, you've already told us how you got into your work is like archiving. You said it was through one of the courses you did at university. So my question is, why did you do music? And second, why did you decide to archive history through music? or archive musical history.
That's true.
Because I feel like it's both ways. It's both ways. There's the, yeah, there's like the history to music and the music to history. Tell us.
So I think for me, growing up, my mom was always very deliberate about having us do extracurricular activities. And so, and I'm very grateful to her for that, because I think it's expanded so much about who I am. My sister, I have two younger sisters, so we basically did a lot of activities. So I think music was one of those things that I did. And but for me, it was I'm a classically trained pianist, and so that's how my music.
I tell you. That's impressive.
So it was a lot of hard work. I think there's also been things in that interaction with music from like a classical, like rigorous perspective, that I've also started like been having to like unpack. There's a lot of stuff that I've had to unlearn and unpack about my engagement with music. Which we can get into maybe at another date later, or whatever it was. But that's how, that's why music, I think music by and large came easy to me. I enjoyed it. And so after I finished high school, I think I took about a year and a half, two years off just to figure out what I wanted to do in university. And so I think during that time I was teaching music just as a form of income, also because I enjoyed it. And I was like, why not pass on the skills that I have to other children?
And let me just jut in here and say, mind you, those skills were top notch, because again, because of the nature of the way we did our school, like our education, when we did extracurricular things, I feel like we put in so much effort that we were excellent to the T. So I can imagine you as a musical teacher, you did know a lot, like you understood your music, you understood how to read sheet music, how it's composed and all. I have a question. Sorry, this is again another tangent. But did you do the music pacing?
No, I didn't. I didn't have to. Yeah, because I did ABRSM. I did ABRSM, and so instead of doing the music pieces, they accepted like the ABRSM qualification.
Nice. But even then, in high school, such a high level of like understanding music and learning about music is still such a, I feel like it's such a wealth of knowledge. Well, is it wealth of knowledge?
I think so. I think it's a nice, a good resource. It's right. But I think also it's also understanding that the way that knowledge was put forth to me was in a very Western perspective. Like the way I engage with music was from a very Western perspective. I think traditionally, for most people, when you are learning, like traditionally here on the African continent, by and large, when you are learning an instrument, you'd go and sit under someone and they would be your mentor. And so you would, they would be passing on their skills to you in a way that was kind of like holistic, in that you lived life with them. And
so you interacted with them in every way.
Music was just generally a part of life. It was like every occasion, every ceremony was marked by music.
It was like an extension,
you know, which is like very different, I think, from like the Western perspective of doing music, which is like, I think there's like a lot of like rigorousness in a way that maybe doesn't allow for much self-expression.
Is it like self-creativity? Or,
it's very stuck. It's very like stuck. It's very like individualistic. Is very driven on like perfectionism. I don't know if like, I mean, not to say that, because I feel like there's a difference between like excellence in your craft and perfectionism. And so I feel like kind of like that rootedness in like perfectionism kind of, at least for me in my personal experience, kind of took away the joy of like showing up to music and enjoying being in the music, because there's this pressure of needing to be perfect and nailing the notes and following the performance directions. So I think it's also been really interesting, like I said, to try and kind of unpack and unlearn that kind of way I show up to music,
which makes me wonder, like, does that, I feel like that stifles your creativity, like, because okay, with the very little knowledge I know about Western music, please don't at me, but I'm not saying you, everyone else is going to listen to this episode. Yeah. But like, from what you've explained, how it's very individualistic, it's very like you, they seek perfection. I feel like yes, of course that stifles creativity in the sense that it doesn't give the musician the ability to, you know, express and find different ways of navigating that piece of music. Like the way Beethoven has been played the same way since he started composing music till now, which is what, over 200 or I don't know, probably 100. I don't know whenever Beethoven existed. But like, I mean, yes, there's a beauty of that continuity of like, wow, this is a classical piece of music and it should be played a certain way. But I feel like there's very little room to, it's classical, but let me add my personality into it. Let me add my own creativity to it. Yeah. You know? And is that what you're saying? Is it like, did you find it difficult during like your classical music training and then now transitioning into being a teacher within the African setting in Kenya, teaching young people, and then getting to a point of now understanding and learning about Kenyan history and history through, well, Kenyan musical history, and then seeing that Kenyan music was passed on very casually. You sit down under a mentor, you listen to their music, and then also understanding how music was an extension of our lives, whether it was through the different rituals that we did traditionally, whether it was even just celebrations. Like, me and you share the heritage of being Kikuyu, and in Kikuyu culture, there was specific music that was played for specific times of life. From the day a baby is born till the day they die. Like, there's very specific roles. And I don't know where I'm going with this question, but in terms... So, have you been able to explore all those things in terms of, like, your African and Kikuyu identity? Do you feel like that has supplemented how you... interact with yourself.
I play.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How you play, but then also interacting with yourself. Music. Yeah. As a person.
I think so. Definitely. I definitely think that it feels really good to know where you come from and the people that have gone ahead of you. I think there's a level of like pride, of like self assurance, of joy that comes from seeing like this is the legacy I've come from. So there's been a lot of joy in that, and knowing that no one can take that away from me. You know, once you know your own history, no one can take that away from you. And I think you just walk through the world more as a more empowered individual. So I think for me, it's also been how that's also related to my music is that now I'm in a space where I'm creating music for myself. Because I think in the past, it's either been playing music for like a recital, playing music for an exam, playing music for another person and not really
for you,
for myself, for me. So I think maybe that's kind of what this process of Vegio Kenya has been, is now doing things for myself and enjoying the joy in that. I don't need that.
Yes.
But just, you know. But I think it also, I'm really interested to see how my research will inform like my praxis in terms of like my actual tangibility of sitting on the piano and playing. I think that will be really interesting to explore. I'm also not rushing that process and allowing it to unfold organically, as organically as it can be. But I think that's kind of how my work so far has slowly begun to seep into like my playing of and creating of music.
Which reminds me, when you said that you're that you're trained as a classical musician, do you know who was trained like a classical musician? A very significant woman in Black American history. Nina Simone. Yeah, this is Nina Simone.
I love Nina Simone. Me too. Like every day. Like every day. I kid you not. She's actually, because I love jazz. Oh, I think I love jazz. I've come to love jazz. And so for me, it's been so cool the way I see how she's like incorporated like her classical music background with like folk music, because she includes like a lot of like folk, Black American music, and then jazz into a creating. And just Nina Simone is such a badass person. It's like
and you know, it's so funny because I didn't even realize this till I watched I think I watched a documentary on Netflix, and I was like, damn, this woman was a trained classical pianist. She used to, and also like the history of how she used to like literally walk across the railway track, go to a white woman's house and be taught how to play music. And even then she felt so out of place because one, she was dark. Okay, yes, she was African, but she was really dark. She had very prominent African features. And she just didn't feel like she belonged. She didn't belong in the white space. She didn't belong in the black space because she was basically, I don't want to use this word, but I'm going to be like Dr. Umar over here, but she was a coon. In terms of her creativity, like her creativity was molded into a white, into the white standard. And then as she grew older, she broke out of that shell and she was able to fully embrace herself. And you see that obviously in her music and how, as you've said, she's able to incorporate folk music, jazz music, which I feel like jazz music is an extension of black culture anyway. That's really profound. And I'm so glad. It's so interesting once you start learning history and you recognize some significant figures that exist and you're like, wow, I see myself in that person. Mm. Because for you, I don't know about you, but me, I see you in her, if that makes sense.
Wow, what a chance. This is the compliment of the year. Please, people who are listening, this is how to compliment me, guys. This is the energy. Thank you so much, because I deeply admire Nina Simone.
Oh, I'm so glad. But it's so true, because not only how you express your research and history on Where Joe Kenya, but then also the things you do with your hair. Wairi Mo, please. Love you so much. I honestly wish, I've been seeing your Jere series on
the hairstyle
on Twitter, and I'm just like, this girl. Yeah. And the thing is, you take the fullness of the African identity, because okay, not gonna lie, Kikuyu culture doesn't have much you can do with hair. It's just either you cut it off but how you explored the continent and the different types of ways hair. Do you mind explaining that relationship between hair and your music? I feel like there's no relationship, but there could be a relationship. Let's make it happen.
There is a relationship, because first and foremost, I think one of my favorite quotes, Nina Simone sings it in her song, or she uses it in an opening monologue in one of her songs called Sunday in Savannah. And then I think even Lauryn Hill has a song with these words, everything is everything. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, my work, the more I engage with it, the more I see how it's connected. Yeah, everything is connected. Everything is connected. Mm-hmm. So I think how I have drawn that parallel is when I'm looking at a photo of a musician from a Kenyan musician from the 70s. Mm-hmm. This person dressed in a certain way, they chose to style themselves in a certain way for that photograph. What are the influences around that? So, yes, you're listening to the music and you're looking at the photo, but there's fashion and understanding who influenced that fashion and why do they decide, and even just asking questions of the image that I'm seeing, why did they decide to do their hair in that way? Just things like that. And so I think, also, by and large, I've also been really interested in just questions around beauty and desirability, because I think growing up, I didn't see people like me on in mass media who are considered beautiful. Yeah. I think the standard of beauty, the way it was put to me or shown to me, was that you had to be white with long hair. I mean, no, or you either had to be very light skinned. You know, that there's a certain standard, aesthetic.
Aesthetic is better, that's
and
true.
Standard. Of what beauty was supposed to be. And so I think for me, just this whole process of decolonizing has also meant decolonizing what I've considered beauty to be. And so through the hairstyles, I've also been going, that's been part of my process of tangibly decolonizing and saying, this is the way I'm engaging with my past and I find this to be beautiful. Oof. And not only is it just beautiful, there's so much meaning behind it. It's not just a hairstyle.
It's not just there for aesthetic.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not just there for. So it's been a lot of fun. And I think even the conversations I've had while wearing those different hairstyles, it's opened up conversations. If I'm in the supermarket, someone will stop me randomly, or if I'm walking on the road. And it also felt nice to just talk with people, especially after coming from COVID.
Yeah, 2 years of not being indoors.
COVID is not, makes indoors. Sense, yeah. It's just nice to talk with people and to interact with people in person. So I think that's where the hairstyles have stemmed from. Mm-hmm. I think by and large, I think with all my work, it's just been a process of decolonizing within myself.
Yeah.
Be it through music, be it through beauty and adornment.
So in terms of decolonizing yourself, so obviously one thing that we've learned in this episode is once you engage with history and you interact with your past self, then you're properly able to embrace who you are. As you said before, like, you've been able to embrace, like, your African identity. And I think that in itself is decolonizing. Yeah. I feel like I'll have to do, like, an intro. Okay, decolonizing is basically unlearning the colonized ways. So it's not only like a physical thing where, like, we gained independence from the British Empire, but then also like the constant unlearning and relearning of philosophical, social and political ways of thinking that have been entrenched via colonialism. And as you said, one of those, well, a very basic example of that could be beauty standards, how you said the white aesthetic was what everybody was told to get to. Either you have to be light skin, so either you had to be light skin, have long hair, I don't know, have a proper chin. Wait, no, white people don't have proper chins, but hey, you get what I'm saying. So, like, how has that process been in terms of, well, one, I feel like your work is decolonizing musical history, Kenyan musical history, because then you're bringing to us a forefront, you're bringing to us details about music history that I feel got lost, like, in the 80s or, like, in the early 2000s. Because, well, I don't want to get into the politics of Kenyan music, but Kenyan music declined for a while and then it came back up. But there's such, like, from what I've seen you post, I'm like, gosh, there's such a richness of history. Me, I didn't even know. Like, you talking about Fundi Konde. Me, I'm like, Kai, the last time I had Fundi Konde was, like, when I was probably 5 years old. Like, it's a name that's been in the background of your life.
Yeah.
And then you bring him to the forefront. Yeah. And I'm just like, what? Okay. And a bunch of other different artists that you've done. I can't name all of them because I am horrible at remembering names. But but my question is, decolonizing all of that and getting in touch with your identity, why do you think it's important, like, what you're doing? Like, why do you think it's important for you to first decolonize yourself and then that becoming an extension of going out to teach other people? Because Brejo Kenya is a very good resource to learn about history. So not only are you teaching yourself, but you're teaching other people. So why do you think that work is important?
I think it's important because I think, first and foremost, it's nourishing to your soul. I think first and foremost, it's nourishing to your soul to know where you come from. And I think, like I said, once you know where you come from, no one can tell you anything. No one can come at you with some nonsense. No one can trick you or, like, blindside you because you, like, you know. And so you'll be like, why are you coming at me with
this
nonsense?
Why are you chatting nonsense, please? Nonsense plus ingredients. What's wrong with you?
Exactly. And so I think first and foremost, that's why I think it's important. And then also I see kind of the importance of being able so I'll kind of use an example. I think I was in conversation with Tabu Osusa, who is the man behind Kettable Music. Kettable Music has been the biggest help, the biggest resource as I've been doing my research. Because they've been doing what I've been doing, but for a longer period of time. So I want to give them their flowers because they're amazing. So when I was talking with him, he was just basically sharing, like, now in regards to, like, Nigerian music. Because, I mean, by and large, when people think of the continent and they think of music, it's like Nigerian music that stands out. And he says for them why they've been able to do so well and have their music out there is because they've built upon, like, a legacy. So they had, like, juju music and then they have Afrobeat music, which was pioneered by one of, like, you know, like, Fela Kuti, he's known. And so he built upon, like, his past. And then, like, Burna Boy comes.
Building off
and
of
he's
Fela
built
Kuti.
Upon, like, Fela Kuti, who's, like, built on his past. So you see, like, there's that level of continuity. And so I think it's important also for, I think as a musician to know like, okay, this is who came before me and this is who came before them. And I can learn from them and I can incorporate what they used to create what I want to create now. I think it's just that level of continuity. I think it also helps with kind of just like that level of continuity and just knowing that this is the legacy I carry with me and I can continue to pass on.
And I feel like once you have that understanding of the legacy, then you're better able to come up with what you want for the future. I feel like a very basic thing in sociology is like you need to understand the past to interpret now and also to be able to define the future. Like that's just a basic thing. If you're a historian, if you're a sociologist, if you're a psychologist, even basic psychology, you need to understand where that person has been to be able to psychoanalyze the book. Well, psychoanalyze, you get what I'm saying. And it's such a crucial thing. And again, like we within our African identities, because of the interruption of colonialism into our cultures, we've lost that. And I think like one really good example is what you said in the beginning about music. It was such an extension of ourselves. We didn't need to write it down. We didn't need to sit down and have books and books and books of like everything that's going on around us. It was something that was it was transferred to us organically through how we interacted with one nature, how we interacted with each other, how we interacted with our elders, our young, like learning encapsulated the whole aspect of life, if that makes sense. And so the very basic things of like where you've come from and where you're going was ingrained in you since day one. And yeah, I think that's really, really beautiful. And I'm so, so glad that you've been able to come to that point of realization and then share it with other people. And I just wanted to reiterate that this, you said in the beginning that, not in the beginning, like a few minutes ago, that, that, you're learning about yourself. You're learning a lot about yourself as you're going through this process of researching about, Kenyan music history. And I just wanted to say that one of the ideas, well, one of the core philosophies of this podcast is Ubuntu. And you know me, I always talk about Ubuntu all the time. Any chance I get, I'll talk about it. But Ubuntu is is a Southern African, well, Zulu word meaning I am because you are. And it encapsulates like the whole African philosophy of community, working together, comradeship, realizing that I'm nothing without other people. And realizing the interconnectedness of everything and everyone. As you said, everything is everything. Like we are so connected with everything that if you take away one thing, you may very well disintegrate. The whole way that we live and interact in the world. And I just wanted to say that it's such a beautiful thing to see in your practice where as much as you're learning about yourself, you're extending that to other people and enabling them to learn about themselves, which is building community, which I think is the very essence of Ubuntu, because you're realizing, wait, I can't just learn this by myself. I need to share it with other people. And also as you share it with other people, you end up knowing more, you end up learning more and I guess growing even more. Which leads me to my other question is, how do you feel this experience has influenced like your understanding of social political issues and how has it influenced your praxis when it comes to social political issues?
I think for me, it's been really interesting to see how music by and large has been a conduit for social political movements and how... And it's really fun because you see, for me as a musician, as a creative, it's really fun to understand politics and social ways of being through music. Because a lot of this music, by and large, is created within a context, and a lot of those musicians spoke to that context that they were living in. And so I think for me, it's understanding even like the song, you know, who can bogle me, you know, by Gidi Gidi Mati Mati. And like understanding the history behind that song. I think I first came across the history behind that song through Too Early for Birds. You've heard of like Too Early for Birds? They're this like really great, amazing a storytelling group who puts on productions on like Kenyan history. So I came and I think I went for one of their first productions and I heard that song and I was like, what? This song was like based on like people rebelling against Moi's regime.
That was the song. That was the anthem for the coup.
It
reminds me, like, you know how during BLM protests, Kendrick Lamar's All Right song was like the anthem. People were singing that as they were protesting, like, we're gonna be all right.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the same context. It was the song. Yeah.
It was the song.
And also when you listen to the song, it emboldens you. It gives you some boldness. You're just who can bold me? Who?
Exactly. And then, I mean, I remember growing up singing it when I was like, what? I don't know. I was young. And that's how, this is cool, such a cool song. But like now getting older and like realizing the context within that, what that song is really great. I think for me, it's also been a way to kind of understand how a lot of systems in Kenya have not changed. I mean, by and large, I think we still live in a very colonized way of being. Even just like understanding like segregation in Nairobi. And seeing also how music was segregated in regards to who was allowed to enjoy music in certain spaces and who was allowed in certain spaces and kind of seeing how that plays out today in regards to just like how people occupy spaces or who's allowed to occupy certain spaces just based on either maybe class
where they're from.
So I'm still learning and I'm still trying to connect the dots and still very much a student of understanding music, especially social politically.
That's really interesting because you've mentioned how Nairobi was built, like the segregation that exists in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And this is something I always tell people around here. Like, I'm like, Nairobi was built for segregation. We have...
Yeah, Nairobi was not built for people, black people. It wasn't.
Yeah, so there's like, you know, like there's a whole... How there are different parts of Nairobi where you'll find just purely the Indian community. You go to parts of Nairobi where you'll find purely the white community. You go to parts of Nairobi and you'll find out like the black community as well. And obviously that has changed and morphed over the years because of ever since we gained independence. But those lines are still there because the white people were replaced by rich black people. The Indians were also replaced by middle class black people. Very much so those vestiges still exist and you'll still see them. And it's funny because it directly translates to music in terms of, like right now, let's talk about the Kenyan music scene now. Let's try and interlink history with now. Looking at, I feel like this is a long shot, but this is the way my brain works. So bear with me.
Okay.
I don't know if you've read this book called Dance of the Jacaranda by, what's this author called?
I have. Yeah. It was a really hard read for me. Peter Kimani? Is it Peter Kimani? I just didn't get into it. Maybe I was just not in this space I was meant to be in when I read it. I have read it though, but continue with what you're saying.
So one of the characters is an Indian boy, and I remember specifically he used to hang out. He was a singer, he was a musician. He used to go for Mugithi nights in Nakuru. And I think something that really fascinated me about that book is how Mugithi, we all know what Mugithi is. Okay, Mugithi for non-English, I mean, non-Swahili, Kikuyu speakers, it's not even Swahili. Do you see how I had to go through the three different languages in my head? For non-Swahili Kikuyu speakers, Mugithi means train. The very way we dance Mugithi is like you literally just create a train and you dance.
At any Kikuyu function, if there's no Mugithi,
what are you doing?
Is that even
it's a waste
like
of time?
What are you doing? Actually, you're failed. Yeah. You're failed. The functions, purpose,
and skills. So like the whole Mugithi concept and how the Indian character, I forget his name, but the Indian character, you would go to the local pub and then he'd dance Mugithi, which is basically the music that he'd play would end up in a Moridi dancing style thing. And obviously, it's very, because it's the book is set in Nakuru, and obviously the train had a big influence on Nakuru becoming a town because it went through Nakuru as it headed towards Kampala, which is a whole other topic. I don't want to talk about the train and everything, but I just wanted to say how we express music today in terms of like the different classes that exist. So right now, you can tell what music is coming from which classes, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if you know this, but Brooklyn Boys released an album, and I think it's the first like proper Kenyan drill album. And the very history of drill is interesting in itself. Like, we all know it came from Black Americans, and then it's just like exploded into the rest of the world. Like, the other day I was listening to Australian drill. I'm like, what the hell? You guys have Australian drill?
What do you mean?
The other day on Twitter there was like Italian drill as well. I'm like, damn guys, okay. But yeah, so you have like from, and I don't want to say this in like a from a privileged perspective, but like from a purely, I guess, sociological perspective, if you look at the different classes that exist, you'll see music comes from very specific places in those classes. So like Sauti Sol, we'd say, is like middle class music, even though they're able to express the different, okay, I wouldn't say they're able to express, but they appeal to all classes. Majority of the people who listen to them are from the middle class. But if you look at Brooklyn Boys, majority of the people who listen to them are from the lower classes. People from Buruburu, okay, not to say that people from Buruburu are like lower class, like, but they're like the lower middle class and towards a working class. So they're from like literally the hood, which is the west of the east of Nairobi, sorry. And then you have music like Gengetone, purely working class people who come, and these people, when they record their music, they literally record it in a shanty, but it comes out, it blows up, and people love it. And then you look at like music that Kina Zinia Manasseh are releasing, Kina Karun, that one.
Karun.
And then I think it just blows my mind how music is still so segregated. Like, it's so hard for you to be able to see, I don't know, someone like Zinia Manasseh go and sing with, I don't know, Miracle Baby from that, those guys, Sailors. You remember Sailors? Wamlambes, Wamnyonyes, those guys.
Yeah!
It's so interesting. I feel like that's such an interesting relationship. And every now and then you do see, like, apparently Kahush released a song yesterday or a few days ago with some guys from the east of Nairobi. I can't remember what they're called, and this is my own ignorance. I'll take that. But like, it's just so interesting because even in your archiving of Kenyan history, I'm just like, this music back in the 80s was so, it encapsulated what it was like to live in a Nairobi that was, one, everyone was just like cold because of the Moi era. You're like, but still people expressed, still people found ways of even addressing the social political issues, and a brilliant example of that would be the song Bogumi. And yeah, so I don't know where I was gonna go with this, but it's just, I just find it really, really interesting that there's that.
That carries, history still carries on. Like you said, like what happened in the past, by and large, is like continued with what happens today.
Yeah. And then also the intersect between creativity, music, and history. Well, creativity, I feel like music falls under any form of creativity. Shoot me if I'm wrong, but And it's just really, really beautiful seeing, yes, as you said, history continuing, the story of our existence as Kenyans continuing. Like, the continuation is there if you sit down and you actually, and that's what you're doing. You sit down and you critically analyze the history that's there, and then you're like, wow, there's like a continuation. They're all interlinking. Yeah. There's a story, there's a narrative being built.
Yeah.
Which leads me to the question. Do you feel like the type of work that you're doing will create spaces for people like, well, actually, no, for you. Let me just ask you, for you personally. Do you feel like you'd ever end up creating music like the likes of Fela Kuti and Nina Simone, who built off of the history that existed and then created music that was not only socially conscious but also very culturally conscious, so it appeals to the masses. It's something that they can listen to feel like, that's home. Like, that's Kenyan music. Like, yo, that's hitting the spot. You know, like, right now, if you hear the saxophone on Fela Kuti, you will know that's a Fela Kuti saxophone.
Yeah.
So, like, personally for you, do you feel like your creative process will lead you to that, or where do you see yourself going? And anyway, this does isn't set in stone. That can change wherever we.
I guess never say never. I think right now, like I said, right now I'm in a space where my music is for me. So, I don't know. I don't know if I would want. I think even as I was entering university, I think my goal for music was to like teach. I think that's what I wanted to do. I think for me, music was never to be a performing artist or anything like that. I think music was always was part of being a conduit to like teaching and engaging in that space. So I don't know, never say never. Who knows, like 50 years from now I could be like, now I want to become a performing artist. And this is how.
But the thing is, I can't I can imagine you being a performing artist, but also at the same time I can't, because I feel like I've only seen you, I feel like you always work in the background when it comes to music. But one day we shall see. I'm speaking it into existence.
Who knows But like, if I can provide like a space with like the information that I'm sharing for other people to be like, oh, okay, then I want to build something from this information that I'm learning,
which is beautiful.
And create like socially conscious, politically political music, then by and large I think I'm like, go for it, go for it. Mine is to share as I learn.
I'm glad. One question I have, hopefully this will be the last question, is, did you ever see Radio Kenya turning into what it is today, in the sense that, like, me personally, when I started following it, I was like, hey, okay, she's doing Kenyan music, I don't know much, so surely much must not exist out there. Then as you continued building up, I was like, wow, this girl is just finding resources. Who are these people? Who's this musician? What is this? Like, it just kept on building up and building up and building up. And one thing I really like about you is, obviously, you have the knowledge of like revolutionary thinking and wanting to change things politically. So you've been able to supplement like your archiving with, like, the other day you were a few months ago you were talking about female musicians and their role in the revolution, and I'm like, damn, okay, it just keeps going and going and going. So like, how has that process been? Because I feel like you opened the lid kiasi, you saw, oh, interesting, then as you continued opening, you're just like, whoa, there's such a wealth of knowledge.
So
tell me how that has been like.
First and foremost, I think my one thing I've always wanted for Veja Kenya is for it also not to be constrained by like borders, because borders are an imperial concept,
and
you know,
that's a colonial concept.
It is. And music by and large transcends borders.
It does.
So I always have wanted the work, as much as it is for Kenyans, for it to also be connected to Africans on the continent, as well as like Black people in the diaspora, and just kind of provide like those links, because I think it's really important to have those kind of like conversation and to open like that, to just like be aware of like nuances. Like, it's not just Kenyan music. There's so much that has fed into Kenyan music being the way it is. And then, of course, there's also the concept of like women in these spaces, because I'm a woman.
Oh, okay.
And I also want to see myself. What a chance, you know. Surprise. Bet you didn't know. Bet you couldn't guess. But I also want to see myself like represented in the archive in some sense. And there's, I've noticed that there's tended to be kind of like a silence in regards to women occupying spaces, these spaces historically. So even with that like strand of research that I was doing about women whose music was revolutionary, and whose lives, the way they lived, was just basically by their own, like, they dictated for themselves what they wanted their lives to be like. It was not because they were forced. They were true to who they were. And I think that was an inspiration for me. And so I think one thing that Where was even this question? What is your question again?
The question was, yeah, so where do you see yourself in terms of the work that you're doing?
Yeah.
Because you've opened such a plethora of different avenues to go. Yeah, so where do you see it going?
Yeah, so where, with all these strands of research and interest, I think one thing I'm learning is to just trust the process as I go along. That's the honest answer. Okay. That's what I can tell you, because I think I would hope that my space would also become a physical space of some sort, that it would also tie into like indigenous communities who have still kept like their traditional music practices, and in a sense be able to partner with those communities and supporting them and being able to share what they're doing. I mean, even people who create traditional musical instruments, being able to highlight who those people are and being able to, you know, have people who can learn under them, just kind of like support the work that's already going through music. I think I would want my work to transcend me by and large. I would want it to like have a life, a beautiful life on its own without it necessarily being attached to me. And so I think right now it's just about like taking one day at a time, trusting that things will become clear as I take each step forward. But yeah, just always hoping that I work with the archive with lots of love, with lots of care, with honesty. I think I've learned a lot from different people about how to interact with the archive, with how to just interact with the archive and care for the archive and love the archive. And yeah, I think just it being like my act of service in a sense,
like your act of bringing back community. That's really, really profound. This is just another question that popped up into my head.
Come ask.
And it's about like what community have you built in the archiving process, like the history process? Because as you've said, like you're not the only one doing this work. Like I could name you a plethora of other people who are either doing it through books, through actual history. How has that process been like, building that community of like-minded people?
It's been really easy, I would say, in a sense, because I think it's easy to connect with people when your passions are aligned and you kind of have the same like focus. I would want to mention Chow Tayana.
The headstrong historian.
Oh my goodness, I'm so honored to be able to call her a friend and a mentor, because I think I've learned so much from her about what it means to engage with the archive, what it means to be a woman navigating this space. And she does it with such like grace and such tenderness, and it's been really lovely being in communion with her in that regard. Another person who I've learned a lot from is Ethel Tawe. I think her Instagram handle is Art of Ethel.
I've heard of her.
Art of Ethel.
Yeah.
She's such a brilliant individual. And so I think she's also added a lot to understanding what it means to look at images from the archive and what it means to understand just like the history behind like photography.
Quick question. Is she the one who goes around taking pictures of Ethiopians? No, it's not.
No,
her.
She's not.
Okay,
the
never
one.
Mind. Oops. No. Go on.
But she's also really challenged me in regards to just critical thinking around images and what that's been like. I know there's some there's Paulina of An Ode to High Life who's doing similar work to what I'm doing, but now with Ghanaian high life music, and she's such a lovely person as well. And so I think I've also been really blessed to have good, like solid around people who I've been able to be in communion with as I'm doing this work and who I'm able to learn from. Because, yeah, I'm not a solo act. Please, people, there's so much. There's a community that has informed who I am, what I do. I'm not just a one-woman hit wonder, whatever.
I am.
Yeah, my work is firmly based and guided by the people I've been in conversation and communion with.
That's so wonderful. And that again in itself is like the beauty of community, the beauty of realizing the interconnectedness of things. Like Tatiana Chow, let me just call her the headstrong historian. Like, she's Kenyan. And then now you have the other lady that you mentioned, Ethel Tower. I'm assuming she's not Kenyan. That doesn't sound like a Kenyan name.
No, she's from Cameroon, but she's based in different places around
so,
this world.
And then also your Ghanaian friend as well. So, like, seeing the interlinkedness and interconnectedness, English, of everyone. And it's such a beautiful testimony as well that you have that community around you. As you said, it is such a blessing. And it's so, so beautiful seeing that blessing supplement itself in your work and, like, the type of work that you do. Because I feel like that's a voice... Again, who would ever have thought you could archive history through music or music? You could archive musical history. Yeah. But here we are, and we're learning so much. As you said, like, the one thing we both learned is, like, the song Gidi Gidi Maji Maji. What? Yes, the song that Gidi Gidi Maji Maji did and Boga Boy.
Yeah, the title.
I thought the title of the song was Gidi Gidi Maji Maji. That's why I was like, what? It's such a beautiful, like, testimony of why it's important to work within community. Because if it wasn't for Too Early for Birds, you wouldn't have known that. Well, you would have, but it would have taken you probably a longer time to know that. So that's really cool. I'm so glad that you shared that. Now, to wind up the episode, this is so foolish. Yes. We should have asked this in the beginning. What does Wejo Kenya mean?
All right. This name didn't come from me. It came from my lovely, wonderful friend Sam Combo. So I think I'd been toying with this, like, idea of this, like I said, archiving through you know, Kenyan music history, and I was like, hey, I need a name for this work. And so this, I was still in university at this time, and so I went, Sam was my neighbor, so, like, I went to his door. It was like 9 in the night. I'm like, Sam, I have this idea. Can you give me a name? I need a name.
Like, now, before this idea disappears.
And so, like, we sat and then we discussed, and I'm like, I need a name that, like, kind of, like, encapsulates, like, music for the people of Kenya, because that's what Wejo Kenya means. It means music for the people of Kenya. And he was like, yo, I think this name would work, but let me call my mom to, like, double check. Because it's a Luo word. So we called his mom, and the mom was like, yeah, it means this. And we're like,
boom,
we move. So even the name, you see, even the name, it was, like, brought forth in community. So, yeah, that's what it means. It means music for the people of Kenya.
Man, Marimo, thank you so much. I feel like... you've hit all the tick boxes. I didn't mention this in the beginning of the episode, but again, the idea for this podcast is, I call it the three U's. It's Ubunifu, which is creativity, the name of the podcast. And the work that you're doing is already creative in itself. And then Ubuntu, interlinking with other people and building community and interacting in that community and growing in that community. And then the last one is Ujamaa, comradeship, working with people. Arms in arms. This is more like political praxis, but still, it makes the same. I feel like they're all greatly interlinked to encapsulate who we are as people, and then being able to, you know, share that knowledge with people as you're learning, you're sharing it with other people, and it's such a beautiful testament. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is so much fun. I even felt like it was just us having, like, a regular
conversation.
Like, you know, just like la-di-da-di-da. So thank you so much for hosting and creating such a warm space.
I'm glad. Thank you.
And for asking such lovely questions.
Even
though
they're long-winded, I need to work on
that. You're great at this.
Ati, what did you
say? You're great at this.
I am.
Yeah.
I don't know if that should be edited out, but we'll see.
Yeah. Don't edit it out. Me, I'm forgiving you your flowers. Oh. And you must, other people must be witness to you getting and receiving your flowers.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much for your remote. Thank you so much for also the work that you're doing. It is crucial. It is important. And I hope this gives you, I hope this is a place where a lot of you listeners will listen to this and realize, oh, wow, there are people doing this work and it's amazing and you should support them. Go give Wejo Kenya a follow. Mm. Warimo has been kind enough to share resources with me, so you will find them on the link description. And yeah, that's it for the episode. I have nothing else to say. Warimo, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't. I'm just really grateful to be able to, yeah, to be here and to share space with you in this way. Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of our very first episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked what you listened to, please do not hesitate to leave a review on whatever streaming platform that you're using. If you didn't like what you listened to, it's okay. Leave a review regardless. Your criticism is much appreciated. If you have any questions or any concerns or anything you want to share, do contact us via email, and the email is host@ubunifupodcast.co.ke. A special thank you to the producers of this episode, who are myself, Steve Babu, and Victor Miner. And a special shout out to Steve Babu for producing the sound that you listen to every single time in the intro and outro. Take care of yourselves. Goodbye.